88.7 KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, the topic is drones, unoccupied aircraft system. 2.3 million drones will be sold this year, and we're going to be discussing the Federal Aviation Administration's regulations for public safety and the flying of drones, both commercially and by private persons. It's my pleasure to have two very knowledgeable men, lawyers, on the program. Ed Page, who's a certified criminal trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He's a Florida Supreme Court Circuit Court mediator, a commercial pilot and flight instructor, and a partner in the Tampa, Florida law firm of Carlton, Fields, Jordan, and Burt. And Ron Rohde is here. He's a patent law attorney, arbitrator for the Better Business Bureau's Lemon Law Disputes, and instrument-rated private pilot. He's represented pilots before the FAA. His office is in Palo Alto. Great to have both of you here. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded, including the public radio satellite transmission by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies some fields of law. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Ed, are you there?
I am here, Chuck.
Ooh, you sound like you're even here. And you are in Florida. Well, it's great to have you here, Ed. Would you do this, and I've got, as you know, Ron right here in the studio with me at KALW in San Francisco. Ed, we were talking before we went on the air about a couple of examples of people doing things that were in violation of the law in the terms of flying of drones. I wonder if you would briefly start off the program with both of those situations, because I think it's great for the for everyone to hear what you have personally been involved with and observed.
I'm happy to. So, Chuck and everyone, a couple of weeks ago, I was at an event in Tampa, Florida, and was listening to a speaker talk. He was a commercial operator of drones in his business, and he spoke to the group, and in that speaking to the group, in that discussion, said that he had operated his drone commercially at an altitude of about 1,700 or 1,800 feet. I didn't raise my hand. I just listened. I'm a pilot. I'm a commercial pilot. I have my own drone. My wife, Carol, got me a drone for Christmas, and I'm familiar with the rules and regulations and the FAA's app called Before You Fly. And I know that drones, whether it's commercial or for hobby purposes, are not permitted to fly above 400 feet unless you have a special authorization from the FAA. This person that was speaking didn't, but seemed a little brazen in his comments to the group that I was a member of about operating at 1,700 or 1,800 feet. It concerns me, because it's apparent that the FAA is not getting the importance, you know, across to drone operators about height restrictions. But at that height, you can have planes that Ron and I fly, or commercial aviation aircraft like United and others, United Airlines. And so it's just not a good idea. It's a good idea to know the rules and follow the rules and the like.
And aside from the safety factor or the lack of safety on the part of this fellow who you heard speak at this conference you went to, there are significant fines that the FAA can issue here. Ron, can't they? What would the fine be like this? I mean, you're not supposed to fly a drone, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, gentlemen, over 400 feet, is that right?
That's correct. There are a few exceptions to that, but normally over 400 feet.
So what's the point? If, for example, the FAA had learned about this guy flying his drone 1,700 feet, what kind of a fine would he be subjected to?
Well, the FAA can bring a fine against him for something around $23,000. But they can also pile on, because if it turns out he was flying it for commercial purposes and didn't have commercial license, they could add another count and fine him for that. And if he fluid in a careless and reckless manner, they can add that on and fine him for that. So he can very, very quickly end up owing the federal government hundreds of thousands of dollars if they want to pile on lots of different rule infractions or lots of different violations.
Ed, did you learn from this fellow? Was he licensed through the FAA? Do you know?
I wasn't privy to that. I didn't learn that during the talk, so I'm not sure. But I have to think that given his business background and the like, and that he was.
He wouldn't have blown it there. Okay, I'm glad to hear you think that that's the case. And here's a sub-question that someone has brought in. Does the 400-feet height limit apply to all drones? Question mark. Does this restriction apply to little baby drones they sell in the toy store? What about any drone, a hobbyist drone, et cetera? Does that 400 feet apply there?
Yes, the 400-foot rule applies to drones that are flown as hobby or under hobby rules or under the new FAA regulations, FAR 107. They both explicitly restrict drone flights to 400 feet. There is an exception, and that is if you're flying next to a building or within 400 feet of a tower or a building, you can go up to 400 feet above that building.
Which above the building itself?
Yes.
I see. Okay.
Or a cliff or some other feature.
By the way, if you would like to call and speak to my guests, we're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, February 15th, 2017. And let me give you the phone number, and it'll be about 20 minutes before I invite you to call in, but I'd like you to jot it down. It's 415-841-4135, 415-841-4135. We'll take some calls in about 20-some-odd minutes. Ed, there was another example of a child, one of your neighbors where you live, who is flying his drone and apparently heading it toward your home. Tell us about that, would you?
Yes. Before I get there, just one plug for the FAA's website and information there. You know, we're all using nowadays a lot of smartphone apps or applications, and the FAA has a wonderful website that will talk about Ron's point that he made about the 400-foot rule and the exceptions and all the other rules. That app is called Before You Fly.
Before You Fly. And you spell it out that way, B E F O R E, or how would you get to it?
The letter B is in Bravo,
yeah.
The number 4, and then the letter U for uniform, and then FLY.
Well, that's pretty simple.
That's a free app. There's no charge, and it has all the rules and regulations, as well as an important feature, and that is it uses geo referencing. And it will tell you if the area where you're at with your phone, if you're permitted to fly there.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Let me give that again.
It's
B as in boy, the number 4, U for Ulysses, and then FLY. Is that right?
Yes.
That's the FAA app. What about this young boy who is flying his drone close to your home?
Well, if that boy had the app Before You Fly, he could have seen that flying it at his location was closer than 5 miles to a airport with a control tower. And that is not permitted under the FAA's regulations. We can't have drones operating within 5 miles of a towered airport. For airports, this I know comes as a surprise to a lot of people, but many airports have no control tower.
Mm-hmm.
You're just on your own to see and avoid. But for towered airports like San Francisco, Miami, New York, JFK, and Tampa International, the rule is 5 miles.
Well, if I may interrupt for just a moment, Ed, what if there is a local airport where a single engine airplanes are flying in and flying out, like close to where I live. There's one in Santa Clara County. Actually, it's part of Palo Alto. I don't know. Does that have a tower there?
Yes, Palo Alto has a tower, as does San Carlos.
Let's say if a local airport did not have a tower, would that still apply, Ed, the five-mile rule?
Then it's 3 miles.
3 miles. Okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what was this young fellow doing, aside from the fact that he was in violation of the rule that he was flying this drone outside within a five-mile radius or distance from the airport? What else was he doing that you found was really not safe?
Well, there was apparently adult supervision going on, which is a great idea to have adult supervision and training. But he didn't look like he was 13 years of age or older, which is another requirement of the FAA's new Part 107 rules and regulations regarding drones. So the other one, interesting issue that was going on was that he was flying towards my house and it landed and he had to get the drone back. But
did it land on your property?
Yes, yes, yes. But the main issue was that really we're within that 5 mile absolute bar, you see, to any flights outside of a drone, whether it's recreational, hobby, commercial, what have you. So, you know, like I said, since I got my drone for Christmas, because I live within that 5 miles of the airport, my operations have been limited to inside the house.
I see. So that would have been okay for that. How old was that young fellow? 12 years old or whatever? Do you have any idea?
I'm guessing, but it was an intentional violation.
No.
Most of these, you see, are unintentional because we just don't know the rules, mm-hmm. and we don't equate. We equate drones to toys instead of aircraft like they really are.
And what role? Was the boy's parent there watching what he was doing, do you recall?
I couldn't say. There was an adult nearby, but I couldn't really tell if that adult was connected to the child or not.
What should parents, a parent or parents, do? I mean, we had a lot of drones were purchased during the Christmas season as Christmas gifts for kids.
Yep.
I'll let
Ron speak to this.
Ron, what would you suggest that parents do with respect to trying to make sure their child is operating this safely?
Well, the first thing the parent should do is register that drone. They're required to register any drone that's over half a pound, up to 55 pounds, with the FAA. So if they're flying that drone without registration, they're already in violation no matter where they're flying, unless they're flying indoors. Second thing they should do is supervise their kids while they're flying the drone and make sure that their kids are flying it safely. I would strongly recommend that the parents go online and find an organization called AMA, which is the Academy of Model Aeronautics. They have a set of guidelines, safety guidelines, that should be followed. And the FAA actually requires people who are operating as hobbyists or operating a drone as a hobbyist to operate in accordance with safety guidelines by a national organization such as the AMA, the Model Aeronautics Academy of Model Aeronautics. As long as the kids are, the young adults, the minors are operating within those guidelines, and if they're under 13, I believe it is, they're under the supervision of an adult, and certainly any adults operating these drones should be operating under those guidelines, that should keep them out of trouble with the FAA. And, of course, the website or the app that Ed mentioned can be used to tell them if they are within airspace that's within these guidelines. So they should be using these apps. I would recommend that the parents join this organization, have a record that they've joined, have documents on file that they have downloaded, so that showing that they have a copy of the guidelines. All of these things, the FAA is very document-driven, so if they get into trouble and they can show that they're members, that they have these documents printed out, that they have gone over them with their kids, and that their kids were under supervision, then the FAA is going to be a lot more lenient with them if they do inadvertently do something wrong.
When you say more lenient with respect to what a fine may be and the dollar amount, is that what you're suggesting?
That's correct.
I see.
And the FAA may simply require them to go through some kind of education. But Ed and I both help out pilots who get into trouble with the FAA. Mm-hmm. And we're very familiar with the fact that the FAA is document-driven. And to the extent that you have documents that show that you've made an attempt to abide by the rules and regulations, this helps. Also, if it turns out that the parent or the owner of the operator of the drone has a pilot's license, the FAA can also take action against their pilot certificate, which is a whole new set of problems for those people.
Yeah, certainly is. Ed, you were going to say something, I think.
I was, and that is that, you know, I've mentioned a couple times already that my wife, Carol, gave me a drone for Christmas, and I think there's a gap here because in the box, in the brochure that I got to fly it, there was nothing about before you fly or the rules regulations or a summary sheet or the like. I'm not sure if we want to burden the vendors, the sellers, but what a slight burden though to put on them to say here are some basic rules in a pamphlet, maybe a one-page pamphlet, you see, before they sell. Because it's really a trap for most people.
I think that's true. And I think it is the responsibility of a merchant or a manufacturer to include basic information for safety purposes, because I can certainly see that if there was some incident where someone was seriously injured or whatever, and there had been no instructions in the box of this drone for this young fellow or even an adult as a hobbyist, and someone didn't do any kind of research, as Ron has just talked about, I could see a potential lawsuit also, not only against the parent, but also against the manufacturer or the store. Ron, you want to say something?
Well, I was going to point out that the FAA has defined drones as aircraft.
Sure.
These are aircraft the same as the airplanes flying over your head, the airliners, those planes that hold people. They are aircraft. They are subject to all the same rules as any other aircraft, plus extra rules, these additional rules that apply to drones in particular. So if somebody gets into trouble with the FAA, their problems have to do with operating an aircraft, which is a federal rule, and the federal government is a lot more strict. And I think it's very, very important that anybody who's operating a drone become familiar with the rules that do apply to aircraft and particularly to drones before they go out and they fly these.
So this is not just a toy.
It is not a toy. It is
very
an aircraft.
Yeah.
And the FAA does not consider it to be a toy. Yeah. They treat it as an aircraft. And any violation of the FAA rules is a federal violation.
For those of you who have tuned in a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I have the great pleasure of having a couple of pilots and lawyers here with me, Ron Rohde and Ed Page. Ed's in actually Tampa, Florida. And in a few minutes, I'll invite you, for those of you who listen to the live program, to call in. Let me, by the way, take a moment here to tell you that next week, on Wednesday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. Pacific time, we'll have our annual tax tips program for your federal tax return. We'll also have a Call a CPA night, as well as our monthly Call a Lawyer night, when you can talk with a CPA or a lawyer or both off the air. And you might want to jot this down, 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. That's on Wednesday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Ed and Ron, let me throw this one to you. How important is it that someone who is buying a drone for himself as a hobbyist, or perhaps for his child, or obviously if it would be for commercial purposes, purchasing insurance? But let's focus just on the average private person. Ed, what do you suggest?
I think it's a great idea, and it's very affordable and easily obtainable from the AMA, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, and other vendors who sell aircraft insurance. So it's a great idea because mishaps happen. Everybody trips, falls, makes mistakes, and the like. And drones can fly away. Drones can crash. Drones can get away from the operator. So if you don't have liability insurance and damage insurance, you're making a big mistake because it's an aircraft that sometimes doesn't do what you want it to do.
So even if, for example, the aircraft, this drone is being flown by a child, the liability, the responsibility, if there is some kind of serious problem, whether it's personal injury of someone or property damage, the parent is going to be the subject of a possible lawsuit or perhaps some action by the FAA. Is that right?
Yes, and like Florida and many states have statutes that that make a parent liable for the actions of their minor children.
Sure.
So you've got that statute out there that would apply to drone operations of a child.
Ryan, I know you wanted to say something.
Well, in addition to liability insurance, the parent or the operator of the drone can be liable for legal action in front of the FAA.
Mm-hmm.
So there is also insurance available for that. The AOPA is rolling out a new program, which I understand will begin next Wednesday.
That's the Aircraft Owner Pilot Association.
The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association will have a drone membership, a special membership program for drone operators and drone owners, and members of the AOPA can purchase legal protection services or legal services insurance policy that will assist them in dealing with the FAA should the FAA bring legal action against them for their operations. And this is in addition to your your liability insurance that won't help you with legal problems with the FAA.
Let me throw this out to both of you, if I may, for just a moment. Let's say we're not within range of an airport, so we're not within either three miles of an airport that doesn't have a tower or 5 miles of a major airport that does have a tower. But we're in a neighborhood where there are residential homes, etc. If someone is flying a drone within, let's say, 400 feet or less, In the neighborhood, is that a violation of any of the FAA rules? Because if we've got, for example, people working in their gardens or walking along the street, or we've got kids playing and some drone is coming along, is that a violation of the law?
It can be. If the drone is flown above a person who's not indoors, who's not inside of a car, as you say, working in their garden or outside, then that is a violation. Now, the FAA it says, well, above means that if the drone were to go out of control and tumble out of the sky, would it be possible for it to hit somebody that is below them?
Yes.
So then if you were flying a drone over a crowd of people, then it's very probable that the drone would be able to hit those people if it were to fall out of the sky. So you would definitely be overhead mm-hmm. a person mm-hmm. who is not involved in the flight mm-hmm. and who is unprotected.
And Chuck, many communities nowadays are passing rules and regulations that supplement the FAA's Part 107. I think I gave you an example earlier during our pre-show discussion of a regulation that Newton, Massachusetts passed. And also there's one in West Hollywood, California. And in West Hollywood, California, it's by regulation, municipal ordinance. You can't fly a drone except by, you know, in conformity with their ordinance now. And that ordinance came about because someone was flying a drone and the drone cut a power line, and about 700 people were left without power for a good period of time.
What about, if I may add and Ron, what if someone goes to the local park? This is not a state park, but let's say a local either city or county park, and decides that he or she or they as a hobbyist, want to fly their drone within above the park, the grassy area, or maybe there are tennis courts or whatever. What's the problem there, if there is one?
Again, flying overhead of somebody who is not protected.
Okay.
Aside from that,
the municipal rule, Chuck, has to be looked at. You know, the ordinance prohibits that, because most ordinances do. You see, because that's public property.
I mean, I can envision someone thinking, "Gee, this is great. I'm going to take my drone over to the local park, or I'm going to go out to the beach on the coast, and I'm going to fly it there." And of course, right now, not too many people are swimming at the beach because it's cold. But during when it gets warm, there are going to be lots of people on the beach, and I would presume that that would be the same situation. If you're flying a drone over a beach area where people are on the beach, there would be a problem. Ron?
Well, again, if you were flying over people on the beach. However, there's an additional problem for beaches, and that is a lot of the shoreline, certainly in California, say along the coast along the peninsula south of around Point Reyes, I think, and also down around Big Sur. These are protected areas, and no aircraft are allowed to fly under 2,000 feet over these areas.
Oh, really?
Over
not
these
under
areas.
2,000 feet. Any? Okay, gotcha.
That's right.
Yeah.
So flying a drone where you're limited to 400 feet would definitely be under 2,000 feet.
Yeah. By the way, everyone, I want to let you know, we do a live full hour of this program, and in just a few seconds I'm going to invite people to call in and talk with my guests. But I'd like you to know, whether you get the half hour or you hear the entire full hour, you can get the full hour, entire hour of Your Legal Rights available as a free podcast if you'd like to jot this down. At www.kalw.org/RSS. www.kalw.org/RSS. We have come to the end of the half hour, which we do send out to a number of stations in California. But for those of you who are listening to the live program, we will continue in just a few seconds for another half hour. All right, everybody, let me give you our phone number. We're having, unfortunately, because apparently of some problem with the telephone, I don't know if someone was flying a drone and cut the wire or not, we don't have the toll-free number tonight. But here's, if you want to call in and talk with my guest, it's 415-841-4135, 415-841-4135. And we have, that. If you've tuned in late, we are talking about unoccupied aircraft systems, which for the abbreviated version are drones. Some people refer to this as unmanned, but we don't agree with that, so we say it's unoccupied.
Yeah, we're being politically correct.
Because 2.3 million drones will be sold this year, that's why we're talking about Federal Aviation Administration regulations. Focusing on public safety and the flying of drones. We haven't talked too much about the commercial operation, but we've been talking about flying by private persons. My guests are Ron Rohde. He's a patent law attorney, arbitrator for the Better Business Bureau's Lemon Law Disputes, instrument-rated private pilot, has represented pilots before the Federal Aviation Administration. His office is in Palo Alto. My other guest, who is in Tampa, Florida, is Ed Page, certified criminal law trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He's a Florida Supreme Court Circuit Court mediator, so we have to be nice to him, by the way. He's a commercial pilot and flight instructor and a partner in the Tampa, Florida law firm of Carlton, Fields, Jordan, and Burt. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, The number is 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Every county in California has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, with minor exception. For a half an hour consultation, hopefully with an attorney who's experienced in the area that you're having problems with, you will pay between $25 and $35. It's a great service that is made available to you. The money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep the service going throughout California. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And so let's take our first call. We've got Zach from San Francisco. Zach, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chuck, for taking my call.
Of course.
I have two questions regarding drones. Number one, do all drones have cameras on board where they're able to record what they're viewing? And number two, the 400-foot height limit, would that be equivalent to a 33 to 40 story building, a high rise building?
I have a sense you're trying to work this out, Zach.
and in San Francisco, with our high rises and apartment houses, hotels, and office buildings, I'm wondering, how this can impact us.
Let me get some comments for you. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. I'll take it off the air.
Yeah, terrific. Thanks. Ed, let me start with you. What about that? Do all of them come with cameras?
No.
Okay.
Right. They do not. That's an add-on feature. The drone I purchased or got for from Santa Claus this past Christmas did not come with a camera. It's an add-on feature. Some of them do come with cameras. So it just depends on what you buy.
That's true. In regards to the 400-foot, no, that's not a high-rise building. 400 feet would be about, 40 stories, I guess.
40 stories?
Yeah.
Really?
At 10 feet per story. So 15, it'd be 30 stories.
But the significance of that, Zach was talking about San Francisco, downtown San Francisco.
Right.
If you go out on the street, one of the streets in San Francisco, and you've got your drone, and you want to fly it, you can't legally fly that in a populated area like that, can you?
Well, there would be a problem, and that is that you have a lot of people on the ground. Now, if it were by the way, you can't fly at nighttime either. You're limited from flying at nighttime. But if it were very early in the morning and there was nobody out there on the street, and if you're outside the range of San Francisco Airport and so on and so forth, you might be able to. But I think the San Francisco itself is so dense in aviation-related restrictions that it would be very difficult to fly that.
I think it would be very dangerous.
And Chuck, you'd want to check the municipal ordinance because they are sweeping the country being enacted by various cities and counties.
So, Zach, that is what you've got to do. You've got to do some research on this. Now we've got Karen. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Chuck, Ron, Ed. Okay, so two questions. Why would toy stores sell aircraft to children? That's number one, since they're classified as aircraft. Number two, I'm assuming that these electronically monitored unmanned aircraft have computer circuit boards within their system to activate them and to direct them where to go. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay, many of them do. Not all of them, but many of them do.
Okay, so let's say it's funny that you have the show tonight, because today I listened to the head of the insurance department for Lloyd's of London and the head of the electric grid for Great Britain talking about sunspots and electromagnetic space things happening that malfunction, all kinds of electromagnetically run operational facilities on the Earth. So let's say you had a drone, and it went into some kind of electromagnetic a force, whatever it was, who knows, as another, a truck on the freeway or whatever. And that electric circuit board malfunctions, and that drone is now out of control, and out of control of the person, child or adult or hobbyist, operating this aircraft, and it crashes into, let's say, a schoolyard, and it kills 30 children and maims 14.
Well, first of all, let's the aircraft are limited to a weight below 55 pounds. Second, most of these drones that are being sold in the toy store are only a few pounds. So having a few pound object falling on a school grounds is not going to kill 30 children. It might.
It could kill one, though, at least.
Probably not. It
really?
Might. It might cause some scratches or bruises. Might break a bone, but it's
could
very unlikely.
Could fly into somebody's eye.
Yeah, it could, but so can. Yeah. Running with a stick can do that too.
Okay, but anyway, so the thing is that the liability for this is so amazing. I've listened to all of the possibilities of all of the fines from the FAA, and why wouldn't you want to burden the toy manufacturers from putting a pamphlet into their toy box? We get booklets on every possible electronic piece of equipment that go on for 30 and 40 pages. Who cares whether we burden the manufacturer of a toy aircraft with making sure that these people know what their rules are when they buy this toy?
Okay. It turns out that the drone that I bought does have documents inside encouraging the purchaser to become familiar with the local rules and regulations. Second, the rules and regulations are changing so fast that simply putting a pamphlet in one of these boxes saying, here's the rules and regulations, follow them, would not probably capture the current rules and regulations by the time somebody bought it.
But I think Karen's point to me is very well taken, in that a manufacturer, if they are going to supply these aircraft, which some people consider toys, that are going to be sold by Toys R Us or whatever the outfit may be, or maybe you can get it through Amazon or whatever, it seems to me that it is a responsibility, as Karen is suggesting, that a manufacturer put into that box the current rules, or at least somewhere that somebody can go to the current rules. Would you agree with that, Ed?
Yes, at least something like you must or should read the FAA's website or the material before you fly.
Right,
some link,
exactly.
In other words, to a source of information.
Karen, thank you very much for your comments. You're very good.
Thank you, guys. Have a great evening.
You did a really nice job in kind of, I hope, shaking up. I hope some manufacturers are listening to us and not giving us the whatever.
Well, let's stop there, Chuck, because honestly, when one of these goes into a daycare center or causes an aircraft to crash or does something else, you know what's going to, who will be named in that lawsuit?
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
The distributor and the manufacturer for failing to include information about the rules and regulations for operation.
I certainly agree with that. I certainly agree with that. And Karen, thank you for your call. Michael, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm a private pilot, and I was fascinated when I went through ground school. Ground school for one of the local flying clubs 10 years ago only cost me, I think, $100 or $200. Why not require maybe a 1 or 2 day, Saturday seminar for all people that have these, require them to have some minimal license and to go and get this knowledge?
I like your thought there, Michael. Thank you for that. Let me get some comments from my guests on this. Ed, let me start with you. What do you think of Michael's suggestion?
Well, I honestly, as a private pilot, with several ratings and a flight instructor too, I hope we're headed that way, because to me that's the only way you're ever going to close the knowledge and skill gap between what we have now and what we should be. Unfortunately, I think it's going to take some event, some accident, some incident that we all read about to require, or for the FAA to mandate training like that.
Too bad. Too bad it's going to take something like that, frankly, some serious injury or something like that. Ron, what thoughts do you have?
Well, as I said earlier, the legal landscape is changing very rapidly. We now have a rule in place, the FAR 107, which somebody has, which requires anybody who wants to use the drone commercially, taking pictures and selling the pictures, for example, to acquire a license. And in fact, I have a license, which I showed to Chuck before the
Yeah, he couldn't be on the program without that license, I'll tell you that.
Part 107 license. And there are there's not a lot of demand right now, but there are some organizations that are providing training for Part 107. For example, down at Tradewinds Aviation in San Jose, you can take a one-day course that will give you everything you need to know about the rules and regulations and prepare you to pass the test. There's a written test for non-licensed pilots. Michael, you're a licensed pilot, so you wouldn't have to take the test. But somebody who isn't familiar with the aviation system, and this is the first time they've actually dealt with the aviation system, I strongly agree with you, Michael, that they should avail themselves of all the knowledge they can obtain about the system that they're going to fly in. And at the very least, again, go to the AOPA website, go to the AMA website, become a member, and learn all of these things.
I want to let you all know that if you're not aware of it, the January 2017 magazine of Consumer Reports had a very good article on drones. And if you are at all interested in drones and would like to learn more, it was very well done. It's very educational. Again, that's Consumer Reports, the January 2017 issue of that magazine, which is a national magazine. By the way, for those of you who are in the San Francisco Bay Area, the San Mateo County Law Library has a consumer law clinic on Mondays at 10 a.m. If you need help with debt collection or court process for limited civil cases, you can attend a Know Your Rights workshop and get some free information from an attorney before you go to court. That's on Mondays, every Monday at 10 a.m. at the San Mateo County Law Library, and RSVP is required if you'd like to jot this down, if you'd like to go sometime. 650-358-0745. 650-358-0745. The San Mateo County Law Library is at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, right across the street from the courthouse. Let me give you our number again. I'd like you to call in if you have questions, comments, anything that you'd like to share or ask. We have, unfortunately, we don't have the toll-free number, and I think that considers some problem for some people. But here's our number for this evening, 415-841-4135. Again, we're doing this program live on Wednesday, February 15th, 415-841-4135, if you'd like to call in with a question and a comment. One of the things that has always bothered me in terms of my concern about being a consumer advocate and being a lawyer for many years in consumer protection with the San Mateo County DA's office, when I first learned that Amazon, and I'm not knocking Amazon, but Amazon was thinking about going to drones for delivering its products to people, I was very concerned about that. And this would be, of course, if it goes into effect, delivering products in city areas where there are maybe big buildings, in residential areas where there are multiple houses, etc. And I was very concerned, and still I'm concerned, about the commercial use of drones in that way. Ed, what thoughts do you have about that?
Well, I think it's full of issues, and we all think it's unique, you know, and interesting, and just a kind of different way of delivery. But it's important to realize that on the FAA's website is a section called "Is Package Delivery Allowed Under the New Part 107 of the Unmanned Aircraft Systems, you know, rules and regulations."
And what does it say? Is it legal?
It is legal.
It is legal.
The problem
at this
is
point.
You have to keep the drone within what's called line of sight.
Oh.
So I can't program a drone to deliver some package outside of my line of sight, say from, you know, a factory or a delivery center to a residence. I must keep the drone within line of sight.
What does that mean then, Ed? Can you give us a simple example? If you are, let's say, you're a company that's delivering some kind of, maybe it's a pizza. You're delivering a pizza.
Yeah.
What, by line of sight from the pizza restaurant, should the restaurant be able to see where that drone is going until it gets to the place to drop the pizza, or what? How would you deal with that?
That's exactly the point. So
I see.
Let's use an analogy. When we fly a kite, the kite is always within a line of sight.
Yeah.
Unless it's way, way, way out there on a long, long, you know, line or cord. But a pizza delivery could be made as long as I, you know, the pizza shop is within, let's say, a couple hundred feet of a residence.
I see.
I could use a drone for commercial purposes and make a delivery as long as I didn't fly over people, as long as I maintained a line of sight, long as I complied with local ordinances and the like, and all the other FAA rules and regulations about airports and height.
Well,
so
there,
I could do it,
yeah.
But it's just impractical, you see, with this line of sight rule that's in effect.
Sure, because it would seem to me, frankly, impractical taking the pizza restaurant to be able to see in the line of flight that little drone or big drone, whatever it is still within the line of flight as it's delivering to that particular home that pizza. So that's a problem. David, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes. Chuck, thank you very much for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Of course, yeah.
Great. I'm one of your biggest fans. I tell people about your program all the time, and I try to listen virtually every week and have for many years.
Well, I'll send you a couple of extra 20s for that, David. That's very nice. Go ahead.
Truly, truly one of the best shows on public radio. My question has to do specifically with my rights if I feel that my privacy has been invaded by a drone. So
yeah.
I live in downtown Berkeley, close to the UC campus. And one morning, a couple of months ago, I became aware of that sound and looked out my kitchen window, and there was a drone hovering within a few feet of my house. Do I have a legal right, if I feel that my privacy has been infringed upon, to attempt to disable this drone by, say, for example, launching a non-explosive household projectile like a cast iron skillet or a baseball bat or a can of beans at it? What are my legal rights?
Well, if I may, David, before my guests respond to this, was this drone within the boundaries of your property?
It would have been, yes, it would have been within the proper bounds of my property. Now,
okay.
I'm a renter on my property.
Yeah.
But, yes, it would have been on the...
Within the bounds of... Okay, so can you then take a baseball bat or something and throw it, try to hit it or throw it or take a rock and try to hit this thing? Let me start with you, Ed, on this. Can you do that?
I'm going to defer to Ron. It involves a lot of California state law, but generally speaking, you're risking having a problem if you do that. It's better to call local law enforcement or the FAA.
What do you say there, Ron?
Yeah, you remember I said that this was an aircraft?
Yeah.
Anytime you interfere with the flight of an aircraft, you run afoul of the FAA. And the FAA they have a lot of rules and regulations about doing things accidentally and making mistakes. Bringing down an aircraft is not a mistake. That is something you do
that's
intentional.
Okay.
And they get real, real upset about that. Now, I would strongly recommend, instead of tossing a frying pan at it, that you alert the local authorities and ask that they take action. What happens then is they call the FAA. The drone should be registered. They can follow the drone to the owner, and they can alert the FAA, and the FAA comes in and let the FAA problem become the problem of the owner of the drone rather than your problem, because you're talking about potential criminal sanctions for bringing down an aircraft. I know what you feel like, and it can be very aggravating, but it is still an aircraft. And you can't just go shooting aircraft out of the sky.
Would you say this, Ron? I mean, we're talking now, we're in California talking about this, certainly under California law. Would you say, with your knowledge of the FAA rules and regulations, that if this was in some other state, pretty much probably that would be the same kind of potential criminal matter, that this is damaging an aircraft?
This is a federal regulation, and federal law does preempt state and local law.
Okay.
And we've been talking about some of the state regulations or local regulations. It's not clear that those regulations will stand. The FAA has actually issued some an opinions with a list of regulations that they strongly recommend the local authorities consult them regarding. And some of those regulations that Ed mentioned are those type of regulations.
Here's a comment from one of our listeners, and the comment in response to David's question is, why not shoot, and we're not talking about a gun or anything like that, why not shoot pictures of the intruding aircraft? What would you suggest that if David is in a situation where this happens again, if he has the ability to take photos of this, would you recommend that, Ron, or not?
Well, especially if you can capture an image of the registration number.
Well, and that's going to be difficult on something that's at least several feet away from you, isn't it?
But taking pictures of an aircraft is, there's no rule against that.
No, of course not. You can do that. All right, I want to invite others. We have a few minutes left on the program, and the number is 415-841-4135, 415-841-4135. In the event that you are interested, as I mentioned to you earlier, this program is funded by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies some areas of the law. If you're interested in learning more about the National Board of Trial Advocacy, the website is www.nbtalawyers.org, www.nbtalawyers.org, in case you're interested in finding out more of what the certification and the specialties are. They are in the Social Security area, criminal law, trial law, and you, wherever you may be, this is a national organization. It may be something that you want to look into. We have about another 5 minutes or so of the program. Ed, we haven't touched on everything, obviously. We never can on this program. What would you like to bring up in the last few minutes of the program, if anything?
Well, besides the rules and regs that are going into effect that, you know, cities and municipalities are enacting, it's also important to know that law enforcement is out there using drones as well.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office recently got a permit to use its drones for dangerous, hostile, and life-saving operations. And so the importance there is that they're going to use them for monitoring crime scenes, life-saving operations, about trying to find out if someone's stuck in a overflowing river or in an earthquake or the like, and for hostile operations or dangerous operations involving perhaps kidnappings or terror and the like. So the drones are sweeping the country literally, and mm-hmm. the law enforcement's taking advantage of the new, you know, opportunities that drones offer,
mm-hmm.
because you can conduct a drone, you don't have to run a helicopter, mm-hmm. and they're a lot safer and can get closer and take better pictures and monitor things.
Does this mean, as you've described the situation with the LA County Sheriff's Office using drones for various things, did the LA County Sheriff's Office have to get special permission to be able to use these drones to monitor things that may well be in populated areas?
There is a permission process, but I think it's different than the commercial use.
And certainly than the public use.
I see
what you're saying. Okay.
And Ron may know more about this area than I do. Ron?
Do you know anything?
I'm not sure what they're doing now. I do know that under the earlier rules, the local municipal agencies had to get special permission. I believe they can operate on under 107 now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is, they have to have the operator who's operating an aircraft commercially or a drone commercially should have a can probably do that under Part 107, but mm-hmm. I'd have to check. As I say, this area, the rules are changing rapidly.
Well, certainly what I have learned from having both of you on the program, and we've now done three programs. I've done three with Ed, two with you, Ron, and Ed. I feel it's essential for anyone who's going to buy a drone, private person, for him or herself or their child, you really need to do some studying on what the rules are. And as my guests have said, there's a free app that you can go to. It's B, the letter B, that's before, but the letter B and then the number 4 and then the letter U, F-L-Y, and that will get you to the rules and regulations. Is that right, Ron?
They do have rules and regulations there, but I would recommend even better to go to the website for the AMA, which is the Academy of Model Aircraft.
Model Aeronautics.
Model Aeronautics. And the AOPA.org website, both of which have rules and regulations, and the FAA.gov. FAA.gov has a web page and has a lot of information on drone safety. So those are three important resources. What's most important, though, is that the owner of the drone, the parent, the owner, become familiar with the system, with safety, with the rules and regulations, and make a serious attempt to fly not only safely, but within the regulations and the rules.
No question. I think that's just crucial. And it's also something, if you have bought or you're going to buy one of these drones for a child, it's something that, frankly, is a great education for your child, I think, to learn something about this, both you and your child. So I hope you benefit from that, everybody, in terms of trying to educate yourselves, your child, your neighbors, etc., both in having a fascinating, I guess, experience. I'm not a pilot myself. I don't have a drone. A fascinating experience with a drone, but something that is a new and incredible learning experience. My final word on this is always be looking up and seeing if there's anything following you at all times, both front, back, side, rear, etc. I want to thank you both very much for joining me on the program. Great having you, Ed, from Tampa, Florida. Ed Page is a certified criminal law trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He's a commercial pilot, flight instructor, partner in the Tampa, Florida law firm of Carlton, Fields, Jordan, and Burt. Ed, thanks so much.
Thank you, Chuck. Great. Appreciate it.
Great to have you there. And Ron Rohde, always a pleasure to have you here. Ron is a patent law attorney, arbitrator for the Better Business Bureau's Lemon Law Disputes, instrument-rated private pilot, has represented pilots before the FAA, his office in Palo Alto. Thank you very much, Ron.
And I'll be here next week for Call a Lawyer Night.
You'll be here for Call a Lawyer Night on February 22nd. Next time on Your Legal Rights is our yearly program, Tips for Preparing Your Federal Income Tax Return. My guest will be David Hellman, a specialist in federal taxation law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. And it's also on February 22nd from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time. We'll have a Call a CPA night and also our monthly Call a Lawyer night. We're having both, where you can talk to a CPA or an attorney off the air at 800-525-9917. And I hope you join us for that. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thanks for listening to Your Legal Rights, and join us next time on your public radio station. I hope you do. I'm Chuck Finney.